This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to be joined by James Henderson of PacPride.com, and we'll be talking Florida State, NC State, previewing this weekend's game in Raleigh. We're joined in the podcast by James Henderson from PacPride.com, the opposing Scout.com affiliate for this game. James, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you with us.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
So obviously, the first thing that that I see when I look at North Carolina State for this particular game is the stark difference between last year's team and this year's team, primarily starting at the quarterback position. Obviously, Jacoby Brissett is a world different. It's a totally different scenario having him at pulling the trigger compared to what North Carolina State had last year. Can you talk a little bit about how Dave Doran's offense has transitioned to having that kind of talent back there and what difference you've seen so far from Brissett, who Florida State fans obviously know because Florida State actually recruited him pretty aggressively before he decided to go to Florida, which I'll never understand why they picked Jeff Driscoll over him, but anyway. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you've seen from Brissett so far this year?
Yeah, probably the first thing I think Dave Doran did that really helped ease his transition is, when he was hired in December of 2012, I think 3 weeks later, he landed a commitment from Brissett. And after he signed and enrolled, he basically said he's going to be our starter when he's eligible. And, he laid that foundation kind of in the program to where, the current players know it, the recruits knew it, Jacoby knew it. And, it helped him, I think, develop during his redshirt year to where, he treated each rep to get better because he knew in 2014 he would be the guy. And so I think that helped him and really built his confidence up, because I think that's one thing that he probably battled a little bit at Florida when you mentioned the Jeff Driscoll situation because, that was a weird deal where I think the players, from what I gather, seemed to think Brissett should have been the starter, but maybe Driscoll, there was some political stuff there going on to why he got the job. And I think it kind of worked against Brissett's confidence a little bit. And he's really used this year, the first four games, to work out the kinks of not playing for the last couple seasons. And, he's hit the ground running. I think his stats right now, he's thrown 10 touchdowns. He's got one interception. He's rushed for another score. He's been able to kind of generate some yardage on the ground with his legs. I mean, he's an athletic kid. You know about him probably from recruiting. He's a dual threat type guy. But the thing he's done well, I think, in the offense is he's really distributed the ball to multiple receivers, and that's kind of made their offense dangerous. They don't have a Rashard Greene, which I think that can be a negative, but it can also be a positive. You don't have one guy you feel like you're relying on. They throw to 7 or 8, 9 different guys a game, And that's kind of been the consistent staple of their offense in the passing game is the way he's distributed the ball. So he's really been playing well, and he's probably been the biggest key to their offensive turnaround. They're at the top of most of the ACC numbers right now statistically, offensively, and a big reason is because of him.
Yeah, and one of the things that Jimbo Fisher brought up in the press conference this week when he was talking about Brissett that makes him so much more difficult to defend than a lot of guys is he's one. You don't necessarily appreciate how big he is. He's a big kid and really tough to get on the ground in the pocket. Very similar to Jameis Winston in that sense. And I think that's something that Florida State does have some concern about coming into this game is making sure that they're able to pressure him. It's harder to pressure a bigger guy like that because he's going to be a little bit more secure in the pocket and oftentimes able to get the ball out even when there is pressure. So I think that's something they're definitely worried about coming into this game is thinking about how – how difficult it is to get a guy like that on the ground, how difficult it is to pressure that kind of guy, because he's shown, I think, in the past. I mean, you could go back to his high school tape. He really doesn't have a whole lot of trouble with pressure to the face. He throws well when he does have pressure. So that's something I've seen of him in the past. I'm very curious to see how he works in this offense. Now, you did mention that they've spread the ball around quite a bit. One of the primary receivers coming into the year, obviously, is Brian Underwood, you know, more of a speed guy, who's also done some return stuff for you guys and everything. Who else has really stepped up, and what kind of a passing game are Florida State fans really going to see in this game? I mean, are you guys really going vertical, or what kind of compliments around Underwood have you guys had over the course of this year?
You know, it's really interesting, because I think when they came into the season, most people expected Underwood to have a big senior year, and it's really not worked out that way. You know, he's not played a lot, to be honest with you. He's kind of been passed a little bit in the rotation by some younger guys they've got. He had a big touchdown in the last game, and that's kind of his staple. He's a deep vertical threat, and I think part of it, he may have came into the season a little banged up out of fall camp. So it snaps the first couple games, and honestly, they really didn't need him those games because the other guys were playing so well. I think he's the type of guy who maybe they've been holding back a little bit for the ACC schedule. You know, so I think it's kind of a double-edged sword where you say he's not really been producing, but he's also been not asked to play as much. But as far as the other guys, you know, one player that came in right away and has made an impact is true freshman Bo Hines. Going into the previous game, he was tied for the ACC lead in receptions with 16. You know, he's a slot receiver, really, really good hands. You know, can get open against man coverage. You know, they try to use him a lot in that area. Marquez Valdez-Scantling's another guy who's come on for them, a sophomore from, St. Petersburg, Florida. He's 6'3", 190, a vertical threat, can make plays down the field. Stephon Louise is another true freshman that they really like. So he's had a couple touchdown catches, another kid from Florida. Those are a few of the options. And they've got other guys like Jamichael Ramos. I mean, David Greenidge is a tight end that they get involved. The other thing
he's a big tight end, too. I mean, he's, what, about 275, if I remember?
Yeah. And you know, Coach Dorn has mentioned he might be probably their one of their top pro prospects. You know, he's a true sophomore. He's a redshirt sophomore. And he's 6'6", probably 270, and I mean, he's a 4'7" kid that can really run. You know, he's kind of in that new mold of tight end, you know, the big basketball type, former basketball player. He was a slot receiver in high school, so he's really a pass-catching guy who even at 270 pounds, he's not much of a blocker. And so they try to get him involved some. And the other thing they've done a lot is they've played Matt Days, a sophomore running back from Cypress Bay, Florida, a lot in the slot at receiver. And he's got 14 catches so far, which is up toward the lead on the team. And, you know, they get him involved a lot in the passing game. I think he's got 3 touchdown catches already. You know, he's a guy who has really good hands that they try to get matched up on linebackers. What it does is it allows them to show, you know, a run formation, you know, with him. Say they'll have him and Greenidge out on the field together, but then they'll go 5 wides and spread him and Greenidge out. You know, and try and attack a 4-3 look maybe with that type of a formation because of how him and Greenidge can both flex out and catch the ball coming out in space. So I think they really like to do that a lot and take advantage of what the defense is showing because of the versatility that Days and Greenidge can give them.
One of the things that actually surprised me when I went back and I was looking through doing some prep for this one, one of the things that surprised me was actually looking at NC State's offensive line. You know, you guys actually, when I remember last year's game, NC State got destroyed up front by Florida State. It was an ugly game, obviously, as everybody remembers. But when I look at this game, it's a pretty experienced and really big offensive line that North Carolina State's bringing back in this case. How has the offensive line looked so far, to keep it on the offensive side of the ball at the moment? How's the offensive line looked so far? I know it's kind of hard to judge because of the schedule so far, but overall, what kind of progress have we seen versus last year, where, you know, things actually started out pretty well, and then all of a sudden everything just sort of went south? I mean, obviously, The Pack got hit by a pretty bad injury bug last year, which was pretty, sort of submarine the season right from the start once the month of September ended. But what have you seen from the offensive line, and what can Florida State fans expect as they see this offensive line trot out there?
To be honest with you, I think the offensive line has probably been the biggest key to their success offensively this season. You know, just to give you a point, I think through four games, their three running backs are all averaging over six. I want to say 6.5 yards per carry, but I think they have one carry between them where they've been stopped for negative yardage, which that's pretty impressive regardless of who you play, you know, because, two or three of the games, you're in blowouts, and, you know, you've got backups in too, and they've just mauled people up front. I mean, for the first time since 1994, they've had three straight games of 200 plus yards rushing. You know, they've really, really done a good job of rushing the football. You know, I think they've only given up two sacks so far through four games. And the key has been, you know, they brought back the experience you mentioned in essentially five guys who have starting experience. And you know, you talked about the injury bug that hurt them last year. When they went down to Florida State, you know, their starting left tackle, Rob Chris, was out for the season. They had moved their left guard, Joe Stoney, out the left tackle, and he was probably about 275 pounds last year, and he had to play left tackle. And you know, that was just that gave them no presence on the edge in the running game. You know, they've had improvements inside with Alex Barr. He's lost a lot of weight. He's been playing as one of their best linemen. You know, I just think overall they felt like going into the year that was going to be a strength for them offensively, and it's translated over. You know, I think that's probably been the biggest area of improvement on their team overall, has been the consistent play from the offensive line. And they've got five starters. I mean, a lot like Florida State, you know, you've got five starters back with experience, and that's kind of been really the staple to them offensively.
Yeah, so let's flip over to the other side of the ball, and this obviously is where you know, there's been when Florida State's had their difficulties, and they really have up in Raleigh. North Carolina State has had some solid defenses, and this is something that I think a lot of frustrated Florida State fans over the years have not really appreciated, the level of defensive talent that has actually been in Raleigh at different points, where, you know, they were able to match up a little bit on the defensive line over the years. And they've had very good secondary. So when you go back to 2012, for example, the defensive line was good enough to provide some pressure and to hang in there through the course of the game. And Florida State went scoreless in the second half. You go back, you know, to 2010, and again, Florida State only scored 24 points in that game, which is, again, that's where Florida State's going to get beat, is when they're not scoring over 30 points. So when we look at this NC State roster, one of the things that sticks out to me is their defensive line. And I know we just were talking before we started recording, or you were mentioning that may be the strength of the team, really. And in particular, one guy sticks out with T.Y. McGill, who has been very good inside. This defensive line, again, seems to be pretty night and day from last year. What's your impression been coming in based on, again, these first few games and the overall impression that the coaching staff has given you of what North Carolina State brings to the table on the defensive line? And as I understand, they're running a 4-2-5 type look. So, you know, talk a little bit about how you think they'll try to defend Florida State here.
Yeah, you know, they came into the season expecting that to be the strength of their defense, and they probably were a little disappointed in their play in these first couple of games. And I think after going back and looking at it, that I think a lot of the issues was due mainly to the schemes they were facing. You know, they opened the season up against Georgia Southern, who really runs a Georgia Tech-style offense, but essentially does it out of the shotgun. And, you know, when you're a defensive line, that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on your tackles and ends. You know, it kind of prevents them from really getting up the field and trying to make plays, because you're trying to find where the ball is off the snap. You know, that was an issue for them in that game. And then they came out against Old Dominion, and Old Dominion has a quarterback who 2 years ago won the Walter Payton Award for the best player, you know, in the FCS level. I mean, he's really, really good. And what they do with him is they line him up literally 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage at the snap, and then he would drop back even farther. So, like, you were getting no pressure on him. And so, I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy to watch. Just they would snap him back. It was almost like he was almost taking a punt snap every time, and then he dropped. So the guys are rushing like 20 yards after him. And so it was really frustrating for them. So I think going into the third game, which was at South Florida, you know, there was a lot of concern about the defensive line because, frankly, they weren't making really many plays. But they went down to South Florida, and they run a conventional pro-style type, which I think is fairly similar to Florida State. And they just, you know, they just mauled South Florida, who they're not really good. But schematically, it sets up better for them because they do have the type of defensive line where they want to win one-on-one battles against linemen, and they want to get up the field and pressure the quarterback. They don't want the quarterback to be, you know, in any sort of gimmicky style. They don't want to face anything like that. They're trying to get up pressure and make plays with their defensive line. It's not a gap control unit that they ran under Tom O'Brien where they like to let their linebackers kind of flow and make plays. They want their defensive linemen to make plays. And in the last game against Presbyterian, I went and looked. I think three of their top four tacklers were defensive linemen. That's kind of what they want. They want those guys to make plays for them. And they've been doing that more here recently. One thing they do a lot of, and I think the good teams do it, is they rotate a lot. You know, they go three deep on all four defensive line positions, and they will rotate and play different guys at different points of the game. You know, they were down 10-7 to ODU in the second game in the second quarter, and they had their third-string defensive line in. And it's just that's their goal. That's what they want to do because they feel like come the fourth quarter they can wear teams down. And if you look at their splits from their scoring first half, second half, it's really paid off from them in the first four games. You know, they've really been a team that over the course of the game, they tend to get better and stay fresher because of the way they rotate. So they're going to play 8, 9, 10, you know, 11, 12 defensive linemen against Florida State and try to really get after the quarterback. You know, I just actually left an interview with Coach Dorn from practice, and he talked about the few teams that have had success against Florida State in the last couple of years. The reason there's been two things. It's been takeaways and it's been pressure on the quarterback. And they said that's what they've been trying to stress this week is trying to get and pressure Winston, and they're going to try and pressure up on the receivers and make them make tough plays.
Yeah, and that really has been, I mean, the book on Winston, as good as he is, this is something I talked to defensive coordinator from Auburn before the title game last year. And one of the things that he talked about is as good as Winston is, he is slightly less good if you're able to get any pressure on him without really blitzing. And you know, that goes without saying. I mean, that's true for every quarterback, but Winston has had, you know, he likes to push the ball down the field. And if you're able to get pressure on him with four or five, and make sure that you have the safety depth, and then get up in the faces of the Florida State receivers. He's not been as efficient as you might expect. He's torched the blitz. I mean, he's been as good as anybody in the last decade in college football against the blitz. But
to give you a little bit on State, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you
go
off,
ahead,
but
go
just
ahead.
Schematically, they are not a high blitz team. They don't blitz a lot. You know, they try to get pressure with their front four. They like to play, you know, seven guys. And, yeah, you mentioned they're 4-2-5. Look, they essentially play five DBs. They like to play coverage. And he mentioned that today. He mentioned that the key with pressuring Winston or getting to Winston is critical because Florida State runs a lot of deep posts, deep corner routes, you know, flags. They run a lot of deep, slow-developing routes to where if you don't get to him, he's going to have an opportunity for big plays. So they're going to try and get there with their front four. I'm sure they're going to adjust and look a blitz if they need to. But ideally, they're not a team like Virginia or even NC State previously under Johnson Nuta, where they're sending six guys at every play. They don't really do that. You know, they send four, play coverage with seven, and try to get there and you know really support their back end with the extra safeties like you mentioned.
Yeah, when I look at also at the going back to the defensive line, the recruiting class from this last year was really terrific. I mean, you know, Kentavious Street, you know, Kenton Gibbs, some of these guys, obviously Gibbs being from the prior class, but Deontay Holden,
Deontay Holden, Monty Nelson's a kid from Florida, who's a true sophomore from Plantation, Florida, who he's been really, really good. He's a defensive tackle for them. BJ Hill is another true freshman. You know, and that whole group, they probably got, I would say out of the 12 that play, I think maybe 8 or 9 are redshirt freshmen or sophomores or true freshmen. So they're really young. But they got a lot of confidence in them, and you know, they're playing them behind. You know, you mentioned T.Y. McGill earlier. Probably the guy who's played the best is senior Thomas Teal,
yeah.
I mean, and he's been a three-year starter. He's played a whole lot of football. And, I mean, he's had, you know, the last couple of games, I mean, he's just been a monster. I mean, he's had 6 or 7 tackles in both games. You know, he's had a sack and a forced fumble in each game. And, I mean, he's just a guy who it's hard. I mean, he's hard to block him at one player. You know, he's probably been their most consistent, I'd say, defensive player, you know, through 4 games. And, you know, when you have him and McGill really going, that really helps their defense. And, I mean, that's been the biggest stride they made. You know, they had two close games early on to where I mentioned schematically they were trying to figure out what happened. And, you know, they went down to South Florida for their 3rd game, and they were a 1-point underdog. And, I mean, it was 49-7 at the end of the 3rd quarter, you know, and I think they felt like they figured things out on both sides of the ball then. And they came back and played Presbyterian, and, you know, that was a 42-0. You know, so over the last 2 games, their starting defensive units giving up 7 points. Now, again, the competition hasn't been great, but for them, you know, I think they'll take it given where they were, you know, last year.
Yeah, and right now, given what Florida State's been doing on offense in terms of, you know, the interior of the offensive line, that's the biggest concern Florida State has at this point, really, I think, on the team, where they're still struggling to replace Brian Stork, who's now in the NFL, the center from last year. And one of the last things that they want to see right now is a Thomas Teal, T.Y. McGill kind of pairing in terms of the defensive tackle pairing, and in particular a guy like Teal who's at the nose, who can sit right over that center and give some trouble. And I think we may see actually a different lineup potentially in this game from Florida State with a different center at the offensive line position, but in order to address that, but that's going to be where my eye is going to be in this game. Actually, is going to be watching the interior of the Florida State offensive line, seeing how they come out in this game, whether we see Austin Barron at the center or whether we see, say, Cam Irving, the left tackle, move into the center position where he's been practicing all week.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You know, that's the question that I'm interested in seeing. Are we going to see that change to be able to better deal with a guy like Thomas Teal and a guy like, you know, T.Y. Hilton and or T.Y. McGill and some of these guys who have shown that they can really play on that interior. So to me, this game really, it either is close and, you know, and Carolina State has a chance to win if they win there, or if they don't win at that spot, if Florida State's able to basically keep out that pressure and basically come up with a stalemate at that defensive tackle spot, I think this game's over pretty quickly. It boils down to me, that's where the matchup boils down to. That said, I do think Carolina State has probably, you know, they're in the top 4 or so secondaries in the ACC, along with Virginia Tech and Florida State, and you know, you could potentially put Clemson or North Carolina in there, although North Carolina, I think, has based on last week, has removed themselves from any discussion of top anything on the defensive side for a while. But you know, the North Carolina State secondary is very good, was very good coming into this year. They were actually quite good last year, but very young. How much development, and again, it's the hard part here for you is obviously you haven't played anybody that's going to stress you. But
right.
How much development has really happened on that secondary from when, say, Florida State played North Carolina State last year?
You know, I think they've gotten better. You know, they're still fairly young there. You know, out of that five group, and I say five because, you know, they run a 4-2-5 with 5 DBs. Out of those 5 defensive backs, 2 of the guys starting are essentially first-year players, and Dravius Wright and Josh Jones. And both of them are really good playmakers. Their problem is, and at least it was early on, that they were susceptible to getting beat on a big play. You know, they jump a pump fake or they jump a double route. And I think that's something for NC State to be concerned with against Florida State, because we mentioned they're going to take shots deep. And if you know, if you jump a double route or if you come up when Winston, like for instance, I know Dravish Wright in the game against, he plays the nickelback, which is really their kind of third linebacker slash third safety spot. He plays that. You know, he came up against, Old Dominion. Quarterback gets out of the pocket. He jumps it up thinking that the quarterback's running, and you know, he lobs it over his head for a 40-yard touchdown. Just leaves his man wide open. And that's something against Winston that is very concerning, because I think one of the things he does a really good job of is he can get outside of the pocket, you know, sideline to sideline, stay in the pocket, and still look downfield to make plays. You know, he's really instinctive as a scrambler, and that's one thing they've talked about this week, is trying to keep him in the pocket, not letting him get out, and not letting him extend plays that way, because their secondary, you know, those guys like to gamble. But overall, you know, you mentioned they have back three other starters, and Akeem Jones, who had a really good game down at Florida State last year, Justin Burris and Jack Tocho, two good cover corners. Those three guys are probably, you know, three or more experienced players on their team, and three guys they really feel comfortable with, you know, going forward.
And all of them over 6'1", from what I understand. So, I mean, that also helps alleviate any potential mismatches there. Although, you know, Florida State this year doesn't have a Kelvin Benjamin. They're going to actually – it's more of a speed group out there on the field with particularly Rashad Greene and Bobo Wilson as their top two receivers. But, you know, they're not smaller defensive backs. I mean, there's some size out there. Let's make, you know, last thing here in terms of personnel and sort of on that end. You did express, when we were off air, you did express a little bit of concern about the linebacker position, and where that seems to sort of be a weakness in terms of the defense. Can you say a little bit more about that and why that is?
Yeah, you know, coming into the season, their starting middle linebacker was MJ Salahuddin, and you know, he went down with a knee injury, so they had to replace him with a redshirt freshman, Gerard Fernandez. He's out of Lake Mary, Florida. He's a really instinctive kid, but again, when you're on a 4-2-5, that puts a lot of pressure on your two linebackers inside to be able to make plays. And you know, he's been kind of up and down. I mean, he's posted numbers. You know, from a tackle standpoint, you know, it looks really good. But he's also had some missed tackles and missed plays. And, you know, he's got out of his gap a few times. And I think that's probably been the biggest area of concern for them, is just knowing, you know, you're playing a redshirt freshman at middle linebacker when you weren't really expecting to. And his backup is a true freshman. So, you know, they're really thin there. The other linebacker position, they feel good about it. Rodman Noel is a senior. He's played a lot. Through his career, he's backed up by Brandon Pittman, who actually started last year. So, you know, if I had to say there's a concern on their defense, it's probably with giving up the big plays in their secondary, and also, you know, just that youth at middle linebacker and you know, him being able to get off blocks consistently against a team like Florida State, because, you know, you don't want Carlos Williams or Pender running into your secondary consistently. You don't want that.
Yeah, well, so far they haven't been getting much past the line of scrimmage for the most part, up until the overtime period against Clemson. That's probably been the biggest upset so far for Florida State season, is how much difficulty they have had in the running game. So that's where I'm going to be focusing my attention as we watch this game on Saturday. So let's sort of in the final review, let's open the door here to talk about what you expect actually to happen in this game. Where coming in from the North Carolina State side, where are your expectations for this game? What do you see actually as you know, the various possibilities? What do you see happening in this game?
Well, you know, it's funny because you know, I first started covering NC State in 2000, and ever since then, you know, Florida, NC State's kind of been a thorn in Florida State's side. You know,
they've owned Florida State in Raleigh.
Yeah. And if you go back and look at the numbers, you know, I mean, in every one of those games, they've been a double-digit underdog. I mean, they've even went down in the last 15 years. They went down there twice and won, which I think is, you know, that's kind of mind-boggling to say you've done that twice in Florida, in Tallahassee. So I don't know what to expect from this game. I think NC State's coming in with a lot of confidence. And I think Florida State, you know, and this is just an outsider's perspective, while they're the number one team. I don't think even a Florida State fan will say they probably played to the expectations that they had coming into the year. And they're not what they were last year, which I think that's hard to expect. You know, I mean, that team last year, I think, is probably one of the best teams that's been around in the last 15 or 20 years. If you look at, you know, their personnel and just the way they played. So I don't know. You know, I think it's always I'm always, as a fan and as a writer, I always am leery of a team going on the road for their first true road test. And what I mean by that is, you know, Florida State played Oklahoma State in Dallas. That's not a road game. That's a neutral field game. You know, even if you look at last year, they went, I think their first road test was at BC. And BC was a good team, and I think that might have been one of their closer games all year.
Yeah, the first one was actually Pittsburgh in the opener, but then they went up to BC after that. And you're right, that was the closest game. They were within. There was the only game up until the national title game that they didn't win by more than 20, which is still
right. And it was
insane.
kind of early in the season, you know. So I think that's kind of what, if NC State's going to have any chance of making this a game, you know, it's going to come to me from that angle. You know, Florida State, first true road environment. You know, Winston's had a couple weeks off. How's he going to play? I think he's going to play great, but, you know, I think that's going to be one of the things you're going to look at.
And this road environment, sorry to interrupt, but this road environment, by the way, I actually, you know, I've been to just about everywhere in the ACC. And actually, you know, you hear about Lane Stadium, for example, at Virginia Tech, which I think is one of the most overrated venues in the country in terms of volume and noise and all that. I just was not impressed. Field level,
right.
It's just not very loud. But I'll tell
you
this, because of the way that the stadium at NC State is built, because it's built so vertically and it's right on top of the sideline, it's actually, in my view, one of the tougher places to play in the conference because of the. I think it's louder, say, than Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech. I think it's one of the three or four loudest stadiums in the ACC, probably the number three behind Clemson and Florida State. So, I mean, it is
right.
It is an environment that can be more hostile than I think people appreciate.
Right, and I think that's kind of where I think NC State has to start fairly fast. Like, if they can kind of get out, you know, maybe have a big play early, or just, you know, they've got to stay in the game. Because if you look at the wins they've had against Florida State, they haven't played well offensively. You mentioned it. I mean, these have been games that have been 24-20, you know, 17-14, to where you can get to halftime, like Princeton last year, or 2 years ago. Florida State was really good offensively with Ponder, you know, but NC State was able to get to halftime, and I think it was 17-3 or something like that. Where
2 years ago, it was with EJ Manuel. 2 years ago, it was
EJ Manuel.
EJ Manuel,
right.
And it was 16-0 at the half.
Right, 16-0 at the half. So it's still a two-score game. Your fans are still relatively in it. And then, you know, they kind of just kept grinding away, and they made some plays in the second half and came back and, you know, won that game 17-16. I think that's what NC State has to have. They need to be able to stay in the game early, to where they can let that environment maybe put some pressure on Florida State. You know, because, like I said, I'm just a big fan of always looking at whoever the first opponent is on the road. That's always, to me, a tough game for any team, because that's just a completely new environment that specific team has to deal with on a given year. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's tough to say NC State's going to win that game. I do think it's a game that could end up being fairly close just because of those factors, and I do think NC State's improved, and I do think Florida State's kind of still finding themselves. I think Florida State's going to be a completely different team 5-6 games from now, and much, much better, just because, you know, they are young at receiver, and they are young, I still think, at running back to a degree. They're still working out kinks on the defense a little bit. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I think you always, though, have to go with who has the best player, and I think that's still Jameis Winston. So I think Florida State's going to be tough to beat in this one for NC State, but I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah, that sort of echoes my thoughts so far as I've looked a little closer at this game. You know, the concern that I would have going in from Florida State's end is I'm always afraid of a team that has a quarterback that can get hot. And you know, that's the thing, I think, that along with having some pretty good lines and, you know, being able to defend a little bit in the past, you know, as I mentioned before in the previous wins, that's something that North Carolina State has been, you know, you go back you know, over the last few years, they had, you know, Glennon had his best game in his career. You know, that second half against Florida State 2 years ago is probably the best Glennon will ever play.
Right.
But, you know, he was an NFL caliber quarterback. The 2 years before that, you had a pretty good guy under center there too. I'm trying to remember his name. Oh yeah, that guy. You had Russell Wilson. So Russell Wilson is obviously a nightmare to face. Then you go back before that, and you've got Phil Rivers, and it's no wonder that North Carolina State has had as much success against Florida State as anybody in the conference, and it's because they've had pretty solid defenses. They've been able to match up front on defense. And they've had Phil Rivers, who's still starting in the NFL. You have Russell Wilson, who you can make a case is one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And then you've got Glennon to follow that, who also is in the NFL still, although he's not quite at the level of the other two. And those guys all got hot against Florida State. And now you have Brissett. You've got Brissett, who is... of the same caliber, in my view, as any of those guys. I mean, he's not quite Russell Wilson, but he's a really, really good player. And so to some extent, if he suddenly gets hot, that could potentially neutralize the advantage Florida State has with a Winston at quarterback. So that, I think, that's the question. You know, you've got those two questions. Can Florida State do what they need to on the interior, going up against NC State's defensive line? And can they prevent Brissett from getting comfortable and getting hot? And to me, if they can do those two things, they could potentially run away with the game. But if one of those two things goes the other way, now we're looking at a dogfight. And if both of those things goes the way that North Carolina State goes, you could see an upset in this game. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Winston will come out a little bit hot just because of, wanting to, feeling like he's, sort of had him against the world the last couple weeks, and come out, guns blazing. But this is the kind of game that, I think this is one of the more difficult games on Florida State's schedule. I mean, a lot of Florida State fans look at Louisville and some others. I think this is a much tougher game on the road than that game, for example. I'm very curious. I think this is going to be a really fun game to be at. I look forward to seeing you there. We'll chat once we get to the box, I'm sure. But thanks, James, for joining us. Again, this was James Henderson from PacPride.com. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. If you want more, please join us at NoelDigest.com and PacPride.com. But thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. I made this.